The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? Your soon-to-be, if not already favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.
Hello and welcome to the Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude. I'm the dad.
I'm Austin Rude. I'm the son. Every week we watch a movie and then we get on mic and we talk about it. This week, though.
Not this week.
We didn't watch a movie.
That's right.
We watched a show.
That's right. More on that in just a quick minute.
Yeah.
What have you been up to? How's this week been treating you?
It's been pretty good. I watched... Let's see. The only new thing I think I watched was Pretty Woman. I watched with my boyfriend.
Julia Roberts, Richard Gere.
Yeah, I kind of can't tell if that movie is progressive or a little rude to sex workers. I can't figure it out. It was an interesting movie, though.
I don't think that movie was trying to take a position, good, bad, or the other on the sex worker industry. I think it was...
Right, I was like,
just
oh, look,
romantic
they have...
comedy from its day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They humanize the sex worker, and then they have the tropes, sure. You know,
well,
it's a thing.
I think in some ways it is kind of progressive that it was about sex workers, and they showed them as actual people with, you know...
Sometimes you don't get that.
Some amount of depth, I guess.
Yeah.
For, I mean... It's a romantic comedy. It's kind of a throwaway movie. It's fine. Yeah.
All right.
That's kind of an odd choice for you.
Well, boyfriend picked it. Blame him, okay?
No, I'm not blaming anybody. That was a very popular movie of its day. And I think it's still, like, very well remembered by, like, people my age.
I think it does hold up.
I don't think a lot of... younger people are going, oh, what's this Pretty Woman movie? I should watch. It's not one of those like that is been canonized in like these great films that you have to see from the past.
Right. It's not like Breakfast Club.
Something like that. Yeah. That I think people share with their kids and kind of gets trickled down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't hear it talked about hardly at all. So it's kind of weird.
Surprise.
Overall, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I liked it.
It's a fun movie. There's some
some of the jokes really caught me off guard, and it was like, oh, that's funny.
There's some really clever stuff, and like the Hector Elizondo, is that his name? He plays like the concierge at the hotel.
Right. He's always like looking in on them.
And
like...
He's like actually so charming in that movie. And just like he plays such a sweet guy that I just like that's a big standout for me. And that when I think about that movie is because he's just like kind of this side character that kind of steals every scene that he's in and is sort of like the most fun character in there.
Also the guy who runs the elevator and is always like peeking in.
Yeah. It's all, yeah.
What about you?
Not a whole lot. I watched a little bit of, this has been on Netflix for a while. Norm MacDonald has like this weird talk show. I can't even remember what it's called. It's something like Norm MacDonald has a show or something like that.
I guess it tells you what it's
where
about.
Where he just has a guest on and he makes jokes and is very Norm MacDonald, but also kind of interviews them. It's just this very loose, very like bare bones kind of talk show. And It's kind of interesting. I watched a few episodes of that. And
Norm MacDonald is cool.
Yeah.
So that seems interesting.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh, Norm MacDonald has a thing. I'm going to check it out because he's always funny and always interesting. And I think legitimately he's kind of a sweet guy. Like, I remember seeing when David Letterman was retiring, Norm went on there to do stand-up. And at the end of his set, he talked about, like, Letterman was the first guy to put me on TV, and he was one of my comedy heroes, and he almost starts crying, who is, like, this very cynical smartass we're used to seeing when you see him have a real genuine moment. So, yeah, I always like Norm. Wow. And that show's pretty good. And this morning I watched an old cop movie called 48 Hours. It was Eddie Murphy's first movie. I had not seen it in years.
Never heard of it.
It's a good, like, buddy cop movie with him and Nick Nolte. Basically tracking down his old... he's a prisoner. He's a convict. And Nick Nolte's a cop. And he gets him out of jail to track down his old gang, basically.
Huh. When did they come out?
Early 80s. Like,
oh, okay.
Eddie Murphy was still on Saturday Night Live. And it was kind of the thing.
That says something.
It was kind of the thing that made him like this really big star. He was only like 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah, he's not that old.
No, he's not. He's in his early 60s.
That's like 40 years ago. Yeah.
But his Coming to America sequel just came out, and so Amazon Prime has a bunch of Eddie Murphy movies on there.
Okay.
And I saw that, and I'm like, oh, I haven't seen this in years, and it's still pretty good. It's very of its day, but like...
You just put it on a whim?
Yeah, kind of. Just
kind of cool.
Flipping through this morning and having my coffee, and I was like, oh, I haven't watched 48 Hours in years. And it's a fun movie. Walter Hill wrote and directed it. Walter Hill is he was a producer on Alien, the original Alien. And a big, like, action movie writer and director. He wrote the original Getaway with Steve McQueen. He didn't direct it, but he did write it. Walter Hill's one of those guys. It's like, if you see his name on something from the 70s and 80s, give it a look, because it's probably pretty decent.
That's good. Those creators that, like, kind of give you a heads up. Like,
yeah.
You know this is going to be worth
it. They have, like, a pedigree where you're like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'll check this out.
They're not just taking the money.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they are, but there's still some quality to it. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. I don't think I've watched much else except for spent a lot of my week watching what we're talking about today.
Ooh, I wonder what that is.
Why don't you take the reins and tell us?
All right. This week we are back in Michael Konietzko and Michael Dante DiMartino's World of Benders. This time we are reviewing The Legend of Korra Book 3. This season finds Korra and Team Avatar searching for airbenders in an attempt to rebuild the nearly extinct Air Nation, while also fighting a group of anarchists attempting to destroy all world leaders. That's a lot. There's a lot going on here.
There is a lot going on.
I want to start real quick with saying that this season is a soft reboot for the show. That's how I interpret it, at least.
That's interesting.
Like, that first episode, it's called A Breath of Fresh Air.
Right.
And it kind of introduced this concept of harmonic convergence from book two.
Right.
Has reintroduced airbenders into the world. And just everything about the feel of it, we're getting reintroduced to characters. There's this family feel to everyone on Airbender Nation or Airbender Island, and it feels like a new beginning for the show, and it's also a huge increase in quality.
Especially the latter.
Right.
I will say, I don't know that I would classify it as a reboot, just because everything that is a driver for what happens this season is a direct result of harmonic convergence and the entirety of season 2.
Mm-hmm. It's tied in well.
And the characters are already established, you know what I mean? It's not like we have to re-meet Korra and Tenzin and things like that. I think there is a lot of carryover, but I do feel like this, aside from that, this is, I don't know if it's standalone or if I just want it to be, because I did enjoy this season, and I have not enjoyed the first two seasons.
Well, this season is kind of the creators getting their shit together, basically. Like,
clearly.
You know, for the first two seasons, they were kind of like not sure, is the show actually going to work? Season three is actually really interesting because they greenlit Nickelodeon. They greenlit seasons 3 and 4 of Legend of Korra. But then they basically said, this is it. This is all you get. And we're not going to air it on TV. We're going to put it online. So it aired weekly, but it aired online. Partly because they knew their audience for this show was teenagers. It's kind of more mature.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was really interesting. So they had two seasons. So they're able to like kind of set up the next season. They know where they're going and they have like this really solid footwork.
Yeah.
And so I think that works to build on.
You think it gave it almost just a foundation to tell the story they really wanted to tell.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And I don't think you're totally wrong, because I don't know that this stands on its own without that foundation, without background on who these characters are, where they fall in the Avatar universe, you know, as it relates to like Aang, last Airbender.
You have to kind of already be invested.
Right. And you have to understand, like, I don't like I haven't been completely taken with like Korra's journey so far.
Uh-huh.
But I did connect with her on this season because I know she has been on a journey and I've seen the journey. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. almost like how I found the last two or three Harry Potter movies tolerable, but tolerable. I thought they were good movies. I'm not, again.
High praise.
I enjoyed the last Harry Potter movies, but I had to suffer through like the first four or five of them that I didn't like, but it does give you this background of like, this trio has been through all this crap and we've seen how they've matured to this level.
You feel the weight of it.
Yes, exactly. You feel the history and the history of Korra's character finally being more mature. And I think she's much more likable in this season.
She's still stubborn, right? And she's still kind of figuring out how to do her Avatar thing. We see her in the beginning, she's really struggling with like Republic City and trying to find all these airbenders, but like, I don't know, there's something different about her.
The something different, I think, is what this show is. The theme of this show, which I think has been unsuccessful until this season, has been about balance. Everything in the Avatar world, from Aang up all the way through Korra, is about the world being out of balance and the Avatar working to restore that balance.
That's the duty of the Avatar.
That is exactly right. And here they have a chance to, I think, it comes together and is better told this season, because we finally are like seeing her not just fight people. She's really struggling to bring balance to the world. We have airbenders for the first time in, you know, 100 years or whatever, mm-hmm. 200 years. And they're like, this is legitimate balance. This is the fourth element. And if we can restore a whole nation of people,
we don't just have the one family. This is a chance.
This is a chance to repopulate this magic nation. And she, I feel like we are seeing her actively try to balance the world, mm-hmm. and bring harmony to the world.
And do it in a peaceful way.
And, right. And not just be, oh, this is the big bad guy for this season. You know what I mean? Like, like it
which is so what season two was. Unalaq was just the worst.
And I feel like that's what season one was, too, with the benders versus the non. It was this.
But I feel like that has some weight to it. It's about inequality.
It is about inequality.
That's what I like, is Korra takes on these bigger. We'll get into Zaheer later, because that's a whole. I could go on for hours. but I want to talk about bringing the airbenders back, because this was like a risky move, especially when you have one whole show plus half of the show already dedicated to the fact that there was a genocide in this world.
Right.
And it has huge impacts and implications and mirrors real world genocide that we see. And it's not a retcon. But they are bringing that back. They're kind of walking it back.
It's not a retcon, but it is a little bit like Deus Ex Machina. Right. Like it is tied into, they just tie it to, they're like, oh, it must be harmonic convergence. All right, moving on. We have benders again.
We forgot the world has this magical party every few millennia, you know, and it fixes things for us.
And that's fine.
I like it, though. That's what I wanted to talk about, because it doesn't just play like, okay, everything's back to normal. These people are not air nomads. They touch on that, right. And I love it.
Because, a lot of them are Earth Kingdom people.
Yeah, they don't want to be air nomads. Right. They have their own identity in their nation, even if they were non-benders before.
And even, I think that's kind of personified in, like, Bumi.
Right.
Who we've seen for two seasons now.
And be a non-bender.
Right, a non-bender, and just like a career soldier, you know, like...
Yeah, he's a general.
And now he has to almost reboot his life and his life's work and be like, oh, I'm not done fighting, and now I have to learn this whole other way and this whole other discipline, and I have to work... with my younger brother, you know, under him and be a student again. Like, we see it when he's kind of rebelling again, you know, like,
yeah, he's leading the class astray,
and he has to kind of figure out, like, he has to find his humility.
This has to be such a weird transition for him. Bumi is really interesting, and we see this in last season.
I love Bumi last season. He was like the best part of last season.
But last season, we see him and Kai had kind of an uneven relationship with Aang, because they weren't born airbenders. And he didn't hold that against
them. With Tenzin, you mean?
No, with Aang. With their father. They had... they felt like they upset him.
Wait, did you say Kai?
Yeah. No. Hang on. Who's the sister?
No, I don't
Kaya?
Remember.
It's something.
Right. Yeah.
It's a K something. I'm sorry.
New Katara, we'll call her.
She's the cool lesbian aunt, okay? But,
She's got turquoise rings and, like, a...
Right. You know, like, let's be real.
A little shawl around her.
But, we see they have this, like, family dynamic.
Yeah.
That's caused by them not being airbenders. And so Bumi has always felt like a disappointment, and then he finally becomes an airbender late in life, and he has to relearn things, and his dad isn't there to see it, and it just...
Right.
It feels very sad, and they didn't explore all of that in depth, but also there's a lot of characters here, they gotta balance it.
The Aang family dynamic of the kids was explored last season, too.
It was.
And I think that was one of the stronger parts of season two, was the sibling rivalries, the fact that Tenzin was perceived as being the favorite because he had the most in common with Aang. You know, even though he probably, I think we talked about this on the last episode, about how Tenzin probably wasn't the favorite, but they had the common ground. time together.
He feels he has this responsibility to the Air Nation.
Right.
That he doesn't recognize that his siblings are a part of, too.
Right.
Even if they aren't airbenders.
Even if they're not benders. And right. And we see everybody more involved this season. We do kind of see a resolution to that this season when they're all kind of working together to try to rebuild the Air Nation.
Right.
And I think that's part of where this show is succeeding for me this season, is that it's making good on promises that were made earlier in the show that they didn't deliver on.
I see. That's the thing, is I agree with that statement. I wish they had committed more to it. I wish this whole show was about rebuilding the Air Nation. Like, it is.
Right.
There's something that happens each season, pretty much, that contributes to that. But I feel like it should have been the main focus, because that would organize things better. It would give, like, this central thing more weight rather than, like, four individual stories.
It would be about, like, balance to the world.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And that's the big thing in this era of the world, is bringing the airbenders back.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this was a good start to it.
It was.
And I think it also gave them a good way to introduce a bunch of new characters without being clunky about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there were, it's always hard. I feel like every time you get into, like, season 3, 4, 5 of a show, you have to start bringing in new blood.
Right.
And I think it's really hard to do well without being like, yeah, we ran out of ideas. We have to bring new characters, just blatantly saying. Mm-hmm. And I think
these creators have proven that they can do that, though.
They did it with Toph and even, like, changing characters like Zuko. Mm-hmm. Throughout all of The Last Airbender, just the people they meet along the way who come back around and become main characters in the show.
That's, I think, why I like this season so much.
The Boulder.
love the Boulder. It feels more like Avatar The Last Airbender in that we have fleshed out minor characters, and each episode kind of has character development of some, like, whether we're focusing on Bumi or Kai or Opal, we're getting complete stories here. And I feel like, especially in season 2, it's kind of just like this big, long story, and they divided it into chunks. There's not, like, an episode built around Mako, or, like, they don't have that in the earlier part of the show. And so that's why I feel like this is a reboot, because it's going back to that formula that worked so well with Avatar.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say everybody got a complete story. Like, I feel like, and the one I'm going to pick out here and pick on the most is probably Kai. Because I feel like Kai is introduced, and the expectation is this kid's going to be a major player in the, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, he's a pickpocket. He's a troubled kid. And they kind of introduce that. And then they kind of dance around it a few times. And then it's just not really addressed very much again. He becomes kind of the
He gets abducted by the Earth Queen. And then that's his, okay, now I gotta fight for what's right moment. And then he's good.
And then
that's all it takes.
Yeah, he's nothing is really addressed again. And then he just becomes like the out of nowhere savior.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, which worked well, but I feel like that and what he represented was the same thing as, like, the first big fight scene at the Earth Kingdom where they were, like, guarding the payroll.
Yeah.
And fighting the people who were trying to rob it, and then realizing, oh, these were just hungry people. Like, there were all these promises made about all these concepts that were, like, introduced about, like, hey, maybe we should reassess where we're standing. We could be on the wrong side of an issue that never really came up again. The issue of income inequality is introduced. We see how people live in the slums. We see how people live. And and it's sort of danced around a few times and then also not brought up again.
You don't think that comes into play?
I don't think it comes into play in the way that... No, I don't think in the main story it really comes into play.
What about when they tear down the walls between classes in Ba Sing Se and have their sort of V for Vendetta moment where...
It's there as a way to have it as a plot device, have this class warfare mob scene. But I don't... And I think it works for that. I'm not trying to tear it down. I feel like this is something they're going to address as a real problem. And instead it's more just used as a motivator for the rioting, the Dark Knight Rises style class warfare riots at the end. In the same way that I think the Dark Knight Rises did the same thing with that issue and didn't really address it like, yeah, income inequality is a real problem and we're going to use it. We're going to bring it up, but we're not really going to talk about the problem part of it.
Okay, we're going to get into Zaheer now because Bane is...
Let's take a break.
Okay, right.
Let's take a break and then let's come back with Zaheer versus Bane.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, we'll see whose back gets broken this time.
Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and iwbpodcast on social media.
Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast.
Mouse and Weens.
I'm a big sister in San Diego with kids, and I'm married.
And I have no friends. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. I have friends. I just don't have any boyfriends or love. Anyway, Mouse and Weens podcast. You should listen to it.
Yeah, it's not really depressing. Fun. We talk about family stories, life and love, and kids, and all the things you're interested in. We promise.
Yay!
Celebrities in Hollywood, too.
Poke your little turtle head out and come listen to us.
Mouse and Weens. Bye.
And we're back. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. What did you do?
I went to Ba Sing Se and visited relatives that I didn't even know I had.
Oh, how nice.
It was so nice. They all lived in a one-room hovel. I gave them my scarf, and they fed me and sent me on my way.
You're no longer an orphan.
That's right.
So,
yep.
Family, that's how you get them.
That's right.
We are sponsored by... what are one of those DNA services? I can't think. Ancestry.com. Yes,
23andMe.
Yeah. Okay, so Zaheer.
Zaheer. Henry Rollins.
He's pretty great.
Henry Rollins is a kind of insufferable to listen to speak. Henry Rollins, if you don't know.
Is that the voice actor?
He did the voice of Zaheer. Henry Rollins from the Rollins Band and the punk metal band Black Flag.
Wow. I did not know that was who this was.
Yeah. When he started flying, there's a Rollins Band video where Henry Rollins is in like a Superman suit, and that's all I could think of.
Why has no one put this together?
Oh my God. I forgot until just now that I'm like, when this episode is over, I'm posting this GIF, and then I go, oh, wait, this show is 6 years old. Nobody is going to care.
the age range of the teenagers who watch Korra versus
Nobody in the target audience of Korra knows who Henry Rollins is. But Henry Rollins is kind of a living cartoon character himself, so I think it's great that he... played an actual cartoon character.
What's funny is he plays a rather serious cartoon character.
He kind of has more depth in this than his he has a lot of like spoken word things. Yeah.
Okay.
He's an acquired taste.
So I wanna you compared the revolution of Bossing Se to Bane.
No, I
understand.
I'm not comparing Zaheer to Bane. I'm comparing the fact that this season of Korra and the third Nolan Batman movie bring up the income gap, the wealth gap, but they don't bring it up as a, we're going to talk about this and have some kind of meaningful metaphor or theme to this. We're bringing this up as a, simply as a way to move the plot forward. I don't even think that's a bad thing.
Right, but I don't think that's what this is. I think it is talked about. Bane quite literally in the movie uses class warfare as a distraction, as an added thing. This is part of Zaheer's plan. He is legitimately trying to break down the barriers of human society to create anarchy.
He's an anarchist.
Yeah. Which I think is awesome, by the way.
I think Bane's an anarchist, too. And
I think Zaheer's way better at it.
I mean, Bane's more of like a mercenary, but he's using anarchy in the same way.
Right.
Yes, Zaheer is, and because Zaheer is actually, he is about something. I like Zaheer.
Right.
I like him as a villain.
This whole season is like a philosophical debate. Pretty much,
right.
That Zaheer is having with the rest of the world. So they don't outwardly, like, there's no, I guess it doesn't come to fruition, but they do touch on all these things that impact Zaheer and society as a whole. Like,
sure.
He doesn't believe in monarchs, he doesn't believe in wealth, like, these things, I don't see how it's not related.
It is related. It is tied in. It doesn't feel clunky. But what does feel clunky is Bolin and Mako meeting their family, thinking that's going to be a big pivotal kind of plot point that is going to drive a lot more of the story. And it doesn't. Just when they have to go back and rescue them from the riots.
Yeah, it really doesn't impact
much.
And
when they see how the Beifong family lives, that they're very wealthy. And, like, they never really connect those dots between, like, oh, our family lives in this slum and my brother and I have slept on the streets. They mention it.
Right.
But they don't really draw, like, a, wow, there has to be a middle ground that would benefit more people.
And it's like world building. It's there,
yes,
but it's not, yeah.
I don't think it's clunky. It doesn't kill the show for me. It's presented initially as this is going to be a big theme of the show this season. And it kind of turns out not to be. It turns out to be more of a plot point. I think it's really well done. It just wasn't a theme of the show. I kind of felt like they didn't quite deliver on a promise they made. I know they didn't actually make a promise. That's what I thought they were going to go for.
Yeah.
As far as,
I think that's fair.
I want to talk about, like, Zaheer as far as how I think this could have tied a few of these things together is, you know, the poor, again, the poor trying to rob, like, that payroll. Or the money, yeah. Whatever they were guarding. Again, that's
the taxes that the queen was essentially stealing from.
That's
them.
The again the same theme being introduced there of hungry people kind of rising up.
Well,
and Korra realizing, oh, we're on the wrong side of this. Korra and Kai realizing, like, oh, Kai's not. Running from thieves, he's running from the cops. Like, we're on the wrong side of this.
Mm-hmm.
Korra realizing that the Earth Queen is a real shitty person. All of that, those themes could have been tied together. And when she is meeting with Zaheer for the first time and he's talking to her about what he believes in, She's never saying, oh, maybe the Earth Queen being who she is, maybe Zaheer's got a point. Maybe I'm on the wrong side of this. Like, I think a little bit of conflict in...
I'm not
all the way through.
I just have to let you know, there's one whole season left.
Okay.
To deal with repercussions. You're right. Okay.
I just would have liked to see Korra a little bit internally conflicted about,
right.
about
they,
that.
They don't deal with that enough. I think part of it, though, is it sucks that they don't like complete their messages all within this one season.
Right.
But also, it saves them from having the clunky ends that the first two seasons had, where it's really just like wrap everything That's... up in these 5 seconds where, okay, we know Korra's the good guy. She realized she was wrong.
I got to tell
they
you,
they leave room for that later.
That was a huge win for me this season, was the pacing of this show.
The finale, the last 3 episodes. Yes. The moment the airbenders are hostages.
Yep.
It's nonstop. It's perfect.
It's a great action movie, those last 3. And they have done their pacing homework. And even though there were episodes I was very bored with, but I'm like, they're pacing this out. They're earning their way to that finale at the end.
Right.
And those fight scenes in the last few episodes, those big action scenes, were so well animated. I'm going to go back to what I said in like...
Gorgeous.
The Avatar, The Last Airbender episode we did, where we talked about like that last season, how cinematic the animation looked. Again, they did it here.
It's on par with the fight with Aang and the Fire Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, but they do it for three episodes of the cameras spinning, the backgrounds all look great.
Zaheer flying and Korra never flying, just like Superman jumping crazy high and leaping through the air and firebending to...
It was like,
it's incredible.
She Human did the Torch. Iron Man thing with it, where it's coming out of her feet and fighting with her hands tied. With her legs. Oh, so good.
Someone pointed out one time, this isn't my thought, but Zaheer is all about freedom through anarchy. And this finale, he fights someone he put in chains.
Right.
He imprisoned her, and it's a really good, like, isn't he hypocritical? But I realized during that finale, I think Korra is a superhero. Like,
They kind of gave her,
obviously we're dealing with humans who have otherworldly abilities, right?
Right.
But Aang feels much more like a mystical...
feels like a monk who is really good at fighting.
Right.
Yeah.
His hero's
Harnessing
journey.
The elements and a little more Jedi.
Yeah.
Kind of grounded in a person. Yeah.
Korra quite literally feels like Superman to me. She, she feels like a Western American superhero.
A little bit.
And I don't say that as a bad thing. Like...
I don't know. Because she is... Yes, she takes like brutal punishment and is able to keep going. She is in a wheelchair at the end.
She is. There's impact.
There's she's poisoned, which is, I guess, like a kryptonite probably.
By a bald man.
Wow, we're really getting somewhere now. This did have a very comic book kind of storyline to it. You have the supervillain, the arch nemesis, who is convinced he's right, which is, I think, so key to making a good villain.
Mm-hmm.
Is someone that, like, I'm sitting there as he's explaining things and I'm going, I like what you're saying. I get where you're at.
My favorite part is we see the very first antagonist that we get this season. One of them is the Earth Queen. And she's horrible, and we hate her.
Yep.
And then we get to that point, I think, in like the stakeout, where Cora finally gets to talk to Zaheer, and he goes, "You've dealt with horrible monarchs. Don't you want them to be gone?" Yeah. Like, and it really makes sense to you. It really, like, oh, he's onto something.
I have to say, I love the stakeout episode.
Really?
I shouldn't, because nothing happens in it.
It's a little boring, but yeah.
Like, I think for the first time, I find Bolin really funny when they're playing that game.
The pie shoe.
And he's like, "Hey, Cora, do you think you could standardize the pie shoe? Pie shoe rules?" And she's like, yeah, let me get right on that after I defeat this anarchist and rebuild the air nation and bring balance to the world. And he goes, "Hey, thanks." Like, he completely misses it. And
it's then, on the list.
She goes into the spirit world, and I think that's a really cool sequence. Is a good, it's a well-written conversation between her and Zaheer. That episode, I think, is really... There's not a lot of action in it, but it's so well written from a story point of view, a dialogue point of view. I found it really compelling, and I really, really like that episode. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best episodes of the season.
And again, the animation in the spirit world.
So good.
Beautiful. Yeah. That tree and...
And Iroh's there, even though he doesn't sound right.
Right.
You know? Or is he in a later episode?
He's in a later episode. But
it's not that same one.
And then... Zuko hears from Cora that she's been talking to Iroh, and that's a fun moment.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the way they bring in the old Avatar characters. Mm-hmm.
It's done better in this season than the past. I really think that's like the main takeaway, is everything's done better this season.
It totally is. But I like the way they bring in Zuko. They bring in Iroh. Toph is not in this, but she kind of plays a part in building the world, and
there's two episodes,
the Beifong sisters,
where it's centered around the sisters, and I think that really, like, mainly Beifong, they're both Beifong. The police chief,
Lin,
yeah, that's right. She really gets development here.
She does. I don't know that I don't like. I wasn't really invested in like the sibling rivalry aspect of it, but it did kind of bring out a little more character development, and kind of that thing where it's like, oh, my niece is the thing that's gonna bring me around, and that's cool. But I like that these old characters are brought in, and it's not done in some winky fan service way. Like, Zuko really plays a role here.
They have something to do.
He has something to do, and it is just him saying, like, I can't get involved, but Aang and I were friends, and this is what he would do. And, you know, kind of this, he's old now, and just kind of giving counsel.
He's not even Fire Lord anymore, his daughter is.
He's just, right, he's just sort of like, he's kind of what Iroh used to be. Like, this feared warrior turned... counsel for somebody.
How cool is that? That in the end of his life, he is doing what his mentor did.
It's great. And the lady with the eye on the
Sonic Boom Girl.
They're talking about. That's someone who can concentrate power. I used one of those to try to kill the Avatar once, and everybody then like gets this awkward silence, and he goes, "Well, it didn't work." Like, I didn't actually do it.
Zuko is so awkward, even now.
Yeah, I like his small role, and that he, you know, just kind of rides his dragon around and is helpful to Korra. And again, like Iroh in the spirit world, and that he's just, again, still giving advice, still being Iroh.
Right.
Even those voices.
It's...
R.I.P. Mako. Yeah, like... I get it.
Nickelodeon does not have the power to resurrect.
You know, they did the best they could, and sometimes voices sound different, and it's just a product of untimely death.
He's still a well-used character. I mean...
Everybody still thinks of Mako when he shows up on screen, and everyone goes, "Oh, you know, remembers tales of Ba Sing Se."
Yeah. He's wandering the spirit world looking for new tea sets.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he's living great. Fine.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say about that. I liked the way I did expect Toph to show up at the end. I expected her to be this Ex Machina character who comes in at the end and oh, she's fully enlightened now. And
she goes into the Avatar state and it's like, wait, what?
I do like that they just kind of go, yeah, she left everything behind and is wandering the world. Kind of like the old show Kung Fu. He's wandering the earth. And
there's people who really hate what they did with Toph's character. They're like, oh, she wouldn't raise her children like that. She wouldn't be a cop. I don't know. I think it's
apparently
fine.
Apparently she would.
People make mistakes. She tried to make the world better. She raised a bunch of great metal benders.
And she's also from this rich government family.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't she be a government official? And, yeah.
She's not a crazy activist.
Yeah.
Not that activists are crazy. That wording was poor. What else? I want to talk about some more... Just more of the characters. Like, lava bending.
Yep.
Not a character, but Bolin. He can lava bend now. That's pretty cool.
I like that he spent so much of the season trying to learn to metal bend.
Right.
He's like, I have to be more than just a regular earthbender. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out it's like, oh, I'm a lava bender.
They build up to Bolin's moment. And
when they're in the jail and he thinks he opened all the
doors. I opened everyone's door except for ours.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's actually written pretty funny this season.
He is.
Yeah.
So is Varric for the one scene he's in.
Yeah, he's around a couple of scenes. I was just like, oh, that's weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if he turned out to be a fan favorite that they're just like, oh, just shove him in a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And he
comes back. Season 4, he's in a lot of.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
I want to see your reaction. You're going to like it, I think. And then my favorite standout character of this season is Jenora.
Jenora, had a couple moments. Yeah.
She did. I feel like her romance with Kai is a little, okay. But,
it's pandering to kids. Mm-hmm. It's a kid. Right. The thing I have to keep telling myself is this is a kid show, or this was aimed at teenagers. Any tropes that I see. A kid's not going to know that's a trope. That's not a tired trope.
It's a brand new thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's kid romance in this because they're kids.
Yeah.
This is a Nickelodeon show. And so,
the stuff with her being independent, her telling her dad that she knows more than him, and her leading this new nation of airbenders. And taking down Zaheer.
Yeah.
So empowering.
It's good. Yeah. Like I think the part where she tells her dad off, it could have been, so much that Anakin Skywalker, I am a master, that whole thing, where
I'm entitled to this.
And there is a little bit of this entitled kid tone to that.
She's a little naive.
Because she is kind of an entitled kid. But she also is proven herself super capable. Mm-hmm. She's like, I enter the spirit world. She's like, you can't even do that.
Right.
And
then we get her tattoo reveal. And
that
it made me cry.
I got the goosebumps when that happened. I was like, oh my God. Like, I did not expect that hood to come down and have the arrow on it. That was such a cool reveal.
There's a side-by-side shot comparison of her at the end of this season getting her tattoo and Aang at the very end of Avatar when he's, revealing himself to the world.
Yeah.
And they look identical. Granted, they're bald with arrow, but,
the limitations of animation. But I did think she also looked distinct enough.
No, I mean it as a symmetry thing.
Right.
Like this beautiful moment.
Yeah, bald kid with the arrows and no,
a lot of pain.
It was a really, really solid reveal, and and I thought a really good way that she was a she's not a main character of this season, but she still got this really good storyline all the way through.
And we end on her kind of because she embodies this hope for the new nation.
She's the new Air Nation.
Right.
Yeah.
She is going to be who Tenzin is and training all of these people.
Excuse me. Yeah, they kind of, he kind of makes a point of that, doesn't he? Like, she's the new Air Master.
This is the first time they've had enough airbenders to perform a ceremony like this.
Right. Which I thought that was also, like, visually cool. Like, the incense burning. And they take it,
bending,
and they have the wind chimes inside there. And I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet, actually. Kiernan Shipka, one more time. I always have to look her up, is the voice actress of Jinora.
Right. She's good.
And yeah, she, again, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. She's Sally Draper on Mad Men. She's done a couple Netflix movies. She's on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, is the other Kimmy Schmidt. she's so good as this young actor.
And, yeah, she is.
And she's even younger when she did this. So, yeah, I really liked her story arc. But I am going to throw some shit at the Air Nation. They are not ADA compliant at all. Did you see how many stairs? Not a single wheelchair ramp to get her.
Oh, I know.
To get Korra.
You can't just have an earthbender bend you up some stairs whenever you feel like it.
They're like, don't worry, you'll be okay. And they're wheeling her out of the room. And then the next shot is 600 stairs going. And I was like, are they going to show her like, boom, up, you know, pulling the chair up the steps? I was like, that's so crazy.
Painful.
No elevator, no nothing.
No.
I mean, yeah.
It's what you get with this lousy president running the city.
You know, you would really think the ADA, the Air Nation,
Airbenders
with Disabilities Act, is season four going to be her being basically Professor X? With all her mind power, but she's in a wheelchair?
No.
No?
But it will cover PTSD in a very interesting... I'm so excited to see...
I feel like it already kind of did. She's very traumatized. Oh,
you can, like, see at the end.
It's. I thought the way they played Korra in the very end as being quiet and being doubting herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the first time we've really seen her full on... doubt
she has been she would come ripped away and then that scene where Asami is trying to get her like ready for the public, and she says, let's do this for Jinora, and that's what makes her light up.
She's like, yeah it's not about me.
It touches at my heart.
What's her name?
Asami.
I thought she was good this season too.
She's
like consistently a good character who doesn't ever get a whole lot to do.
Yeah, her main thing is her dad.
Yeah.
And that's not even in this season.
And this season, it was just sort of like, hey, we need an airship. I have one. Yeah.
She's Korra's sidekick.
She's kind of the Alfred. The Batman Alfred, kind of like, provides everything that makes the machine keep... Alfred's cool.
Okay, like, that's pretty fair. She's got the money. She funds Avatar.
It's all there. But
I don't know if there's any more to cover. I mean, there's a ton to cover, but like, I think we got the main things I wanted to say.
I think so. This is for me, this was a really good season of TV. This is the best season of Korra that I've seen so far. And I would watch... I don't think I would watch the first two seasons again. But I would watch this season.
I think that's fair.
And I'll see what season four shakes out. But I really enjoyed this as a big kind of, almost like as a, like I said, the foundation had to be there, but almost as a standalone miniseries kind of thing. Like, it really worked for me. Paced really well, written really well, and I can't say it enough. This is the most beautiful, wonderfully animated action series I've seen since the original Avatar, The Last Airbender.
It's flawless.
Yeah.
And so many good scenes. Like, I'm just thinking now, like, in the beginning we have Tenzin crying over Aang never getting to see this new rebirth. And we have that scene, and there's just a bunch of them scattered throughout that really tie this together. Like, it's the heart of the show is showing itself.
I'm talking about it as a, for me, what a good action movie is not just good action scenes, which this has a ton of. Mm-hmm. Like, the fight scenes are beautiful. The
one in the air temple is brutal.
It's great, yeah.
With when Tenzin just being...
gets the shit kicked out of him.
Oh, yeah.
But even, like, the very first one, when they're being robbed, and Korra's stopping that rob, like, the motorcycles, everything that's happening in that, it's, I'm using air quotes, shot so well.
The camera, we move the, with
right,
the action.
Everything is moving. That's great, but what makes a good action movie is giving a shit about the characters, and whatever their plot is, believing it. You know, a great action movie, I think, is Predator from the 80s. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Big, dumb, blow-up-everything action movie, right?
Very much.
You believe these uber-macho he-men with too many guns, and you believe their objective to survive. No matter how dumb that is on the surface, if it can bring you in enough to make you believe it, it works. And that's what this show does. You believe Tenzin is overjoyed that there are new airbenders everywhere. I even like the scenes when they're running around trying to collect the airbenders.
Right, trying to force them, the ones that live in their mom's basement.
That guy, you know who that guy was?
Who?
I recognized the voice and I looked it up. It's John Heder, Napoleon Dynamite.
Stop.
It is. Oh, Mom, I don't want to go. It's totally him. And it is like Napoleon Dynamite.
I gotta feed the llama.
Kind of character. And I was so happy to see him on there. But I like all these scenes. They made me care about the characters. The action scenes tie it all together so well. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful to look at. And
it makes a point.
It does make a point. And it gives you hope for this nation that is not even going to be together. I love that they're going like, yeah, we're nomads and we're going to be straight up nomads. We're going to wander
the
earth.
We're going to spread the world
and
word and help people.
That to me was also super cool because, you know, we kind of know a little bit about the Air Nation. Just like, yeah, they have these temples, but they're nomadic people.
Yeah.
And I like that they're returning to that after we've seen Tenzin and his family basically put down roots somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And the, you know, we've got four temples to fill.
Yeah.
And also, the end of this season really makes a point of, like, we're gonna need these airbenders. Like, the Earth Kingdom, the biggest nation in this world, has fallen and lost all of its structure. And the Avatar is out of commission, basically.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, they have that guy, that politician from season one.
Yeah, he's the president.
And he kind of, like, he kind of reiterates that at the end, like, oh, she doesn't look good and we're going to need her. Like, it's just kind of like, hey, not to be, I do like that they had him
not
show up.
Not to be that guy.
Just to be the dick who says it out loud, you know, like.
Well, we're not going to have Tenzin say it.
That would have been great if Tenzin was like, look, I didn't want to say it, but you didn't have to come right out with it. Thanks for leading this.
Yeah.
Korra's kind of your world, and I appreciate you taking point on this
I'm one. Excited. It's our first solely positive Korra review.
It is. I haven't been this happy to watch something in this universe since I got done with Last Airbender.
That's right. We'll be back for book four.
Book four, yep. If we don't do it whenever, this season, we'll do it next season. I'll have to right. look at
We'll start yeah. watching it, but...
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
Ready for shout-outs here?
Yeah, why don't you go first? Tell okay. us who you are repping today.
I am repping the Socially Plagued podcast, and this is a show... one of the hosts I met, I guest hosted on David Luzader's Hit Me One More Time. Right. His co-host Nick was out in December, I think. And May, who is a host on Socially Plagued, was the guest on there. So I met her through there. She's super cool. And this is her new podcast with her, she and her friend Mary Kate hosted. And it is just... It is one of those shows that is just friends talking. It is personality driven. They're both really funny, really, you know, delightful, fun personalities. They talk about tacky Christmas decorations. They talk about, they had an episode last month about bisexuality, you know, covering their experiences.
Oh, I love bicycles.
Yeah, that's right. Tour de France, those kind of things. No, just talking about their experiences with it and busting myths about it. They do movie reviews from time to time. It's a new show. They're getting off the ground, and I want to give them a little bit of a shout out so that our small audience can meet their small audience and they can... hopefully boost their numbers and keep going. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun, I know some people don't like the friends talking, no, you know, rambling, content kind of format. But for me, that is always personality driven. If you have good personalities, right. I think it's super fun to just listen to friends talk. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what these are. Their friendship comes across, and it's kind of that thing that's infectious. You know yeah. what I mean?
Podcasting is all about spreading each other's voices.
Yeah.
Kind of lifting each other up.
We've talked before about, you know, the community and mm-hmm. the as much as there is negativity in some of these groups, if you are running in the right circles, you can make a lot of really positive connections with other podcasters. And that's a lot of the reason that we do shout outs on this show, is to help lift each other up and try to get some more exposure for some of these other shows and these people.
Yeah, I think it's good to support.
So that's Socially Plagued, and I'll have a link in the show notes. Otherwise, you can get it wherever you get this podcast. You can find that one as well.
All right.
What do you got, Oz?
This week I am shouting out Legend of Korra, more specifically the comic books, because not oh. enough people read them, and they're really good. I read, this is, I'm shouting out specifically Turf Wars. It's the first chronologically, and it takes place after, the show ends. So this is okay. a continuation of the show. And the Turf Wars kind of arc, because there's multiple volumes of it, is the Triple Threat Triads. It's like the Republic City Games.
You're in Triple Threat Triad territory.
That's
now.
Right.
It comes on.
You did that voice perfectly.
Every time you hover on it on Netflix, on
it starts
Korra,
playing that
it
first episode.
Playing that clip.
Right.
I've heard it so many times.
Also, the we've been searching for the Avatar, but anyway, yeah, they're really good books. It's got some beautiful art, and it continues the story. It mainly focuses on the main four. It really cuts out the supporting cast of the show,
right?
And focuses on those four and kind of continuing.
Yeah, they're hard to draw.
Their friendship.
Yeah, we only focus on.
Right. So yeah, I wanted more people to check that out.
Who does those comics? Do you know? Is that a Boom Studios thing?
That's something that I should look at.
Just curious, because Boom does a lot of licensed, like a lot of licensed properties.
Right.
So, yeah, I was just curious. It's not that important. Well, we'll look that up.
And, yeah, we can put it somewhere.
Really, on this note, I'm going to say thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility, and it helps us grow the show.
That is right, Dad. You know what else helps us grow?
What?
Telling your friend about us.
That's right.
That's right. Be like the air nomads and spread the
word. Spread the word! Austin, this was not part of the back and forth rotation, so it is your pick next week. What are we watching?
Well, we held off a week, but we are going to be watching Dunkirk. That is my pick.
Dunkirk.
Yeah, I
almost watched that Friday.
Well, you would have had your homework done.
And, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm not a huge... As a precursor, I haven't watched this movie. And I'm not always a huge fan of war movies.
Me neither.
But, you know, this is stylized and it looks interesting.
It is the only Christopher Nolan movie I have not seen, except for Tenet, just because
it's... Right, it's so recent.
And I wasn't going to theaters last year.
That is on Redbox, though. I've been eyeing it.
I've been eyeing it as well. But no, I've wanted to see Dunkirk. I'm also not a huge war movie. I love Apocalypse Now. I love some war movies.
But it depends on what it is.
Bad war movies that I, you know.
There's so many that are just like, it feels like pure propaganda sometimes.
There are propaganda war movies. There are some that are a little more artistically done that aren't really picking a side. Some are anti-war war movies.
There was like one, and no hate if you like this movie. I don't even know the name. But like Tom Hanks came out with one right before the pandemic. It's about D-Day or something.
The Battleship movie. It's not Battleship. It's, shit. I know what you're talking
about.
I
saw the trailer for that and I was like, not interested. It just looked generic.
Half of Tom Hanks's overall career has been, war, historical World War II stuff. And the other half of it has been space. He is neither a soldier or an astronaut, and he has made so much. Look, no shade on it because, like, Saving Private Ryan's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Apollo 13, great movie. The miniseries he produced around World War II, around the space program, all good stuff. Like, and if that's your passion, go with it. You know what I mean? I've heard good things about that movie, but I have not seen it. I'm not here to review a movie I haven't seen.
That could be a podcast.
I don't care. It should be a podcast. Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
What we think a movie is.
Up next, Riverdale. We can just roast it.
And I just read an Archie comic and be like, it is definitely not this. I have been wanting to watch, Dunkirk as well. Yeah, I can finally...
We'll check that off the bucket list.
Check it off the Christopher Nolan filmography list.
I hope we like it, and if we don't, I know we'll have something to talk about.
We'll have something to talk about it either way. I think, despite what, like, the internet hot takes of, like, all the YouTube movie reviewers say about Christopher Nolan, I think he's an interesting filmmaker. Either in a story way or a technical way,
mm-hmm.
and on a really good movie, both.
Yes, my only complaint is character. His characters always feel bland. Like, it's always more focused on the story, which is fine because I love, like, a good mind twister.
Have you seen Interstellar?
I have not yet, no.
I think he builds some great characters in Interstellar. I think he builds arguable whether or not he builds them or not. I think his Batman movies have some interesting characterizations. These aren't his characters, but we all know
he does Batman, do those well.
Batman has been portrayed as a very bland character before, and I think he sort of builds some kind of three-dimensional constructs out of them and presents them with some interesting problems.
It's hard to make a brooding character interesting.
It is.
But yeah, he
has an interesting Joker. Yeah. He has an interesting Jim Gordon. He brings some dimension. He brings some dimension to Alfred. You know?
I'll give Batman to him.
But yeah, maybe I'll bring Interstellar on here later this season because things like
Inception are where he loses me. It's
a little flat, but I think that movie is super fun. That's an action movie. That it's basically a heist movie.
Yeah,
characterization isn't as important as the execution of the plot.
That's true.
And no, I'm not. I don't think that's a super well fleshed out group of characters, but they're fun. They work together, and I believe in what they're trying to do, and it executes it as an action movie really well.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I do. I guess we'll save more of this for next week.
Yeah, this is kind of a... Maybe I'll just cut this out and drop it in.
No, it's a teaser. But we got to be like a show. That's right. Leave cliffhangers.
Next time on The Picture Show.
We'll have a previously on, too, so you know what you missed. Let's move on to social media. Where can people find you?
People can find me, philrude.com, at philrude on Twitter, at philrude75 on Instagram.
All right.
Cool.
Yep. You can find me at austin.n.rude on TikTok. And on Twitter, I am either austinnrude or old2review.
All right. Aust, do you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did everything ourselves.
There you have it. Thanks for hosting this week, Aust.
Of course.
We'll see Thanks you next
for
time.
Letting me do Cora.
Hey. Happy to hand the reins off on this one. The reins to the air bison.
All right. See ya.